proud to announce from Zurich, Men's League Switzerland, U.S. program, Austin Matthews.
To the Billy Box, Nylander gets an extra shift. William Nylander shoots, he scores! Coach play to Hodgson, the kid has his first National Hockey League goal.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Tip of the Tower Toronto Maple Leafs podcast. Guys, the Toronto Maple Leafs are absolutely rolling right now. 6-1-1 in the last eight games, 5-2 victory over the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight. Everything is firing, man. It's just I can't even put words together about how well they're playing, because I don't want to say it's surprising, but it is a pleasant surprise. Who am I kidding? Joining me as always is Jake Middleton and David Morisuti. Guys, thoughts on the Leafs?
Good thoughts. Good thoughts, that's for sure. You know, we talked last week how they really needed to up their game, and they must have been listening, because this has been like probably their best stretch in a long time. Like, I don't think I've seen the Leafs like play. I mean, they probably could have won that game against Chicago. They had multiple opportunities to win that in the overtime, and imagine if they did and where they'd be. And it's a good feeling. That game against Boston, I think, was a defining moment of the season for them too. So, yeah, you can't hate how they're playing right now.
Yeah, it seemed like the only thing that wasn't firing was that stupid cannon. Hey.
I see what you did there. Only twice it fired tonight. Only twice. I think I buried the lead, though, by accident. Leafs are in third place. How about that? Third place in the Atlantic Division. First time in a long time. We'll take that.
That is for sure the spot you want to be in. Because I know that the Caps and Penguins and even the Blue Jackets are not really hitting the skids, but they're running into injuries and they're not hitting their top form. But those are still teams you don't want to play at all. And right now it's a battle for that number one spot, and you don't want to play any of those teams.
If you had to play one of those three teams, which one would it be, though? Between
Columbus,
Pittsburgh, Washington, Columbus?
Probably seriously disrespecting Columbus, but like...
Yeah, it is, but...
The other two are just so good.
Yeah,
I might take my chances with Washington.
Ooh,
with them having
home ice though, that's the problem.
Yeah, it's true.
Every one of them would have home ice.
Yeah, that goddamn cannon in the playoffs. I would probably prefer Columbus. Pittsburgh would scare me the most.
I think they would sweep us. I think they would sweep us.
Okay, well, let's get into tonight's game a bit then. I think the whole motto or mantra, per se, of this game tonight was the Leafs, they bent, but they didn't break. 2-2, you know, they get up early, 2-0, game goes 2-2, 3-2 off Nylander's absolutely beautiful goal. And then Polak takes that boarding penalty. 5-minute major, the Leafs end up staying on the penalty kill for 6 minutes and 47 seconds because Babcock didn't put anybody in the box, which he took full responsibility for after the game, and that kind of was the defining factor of this game, that the Leafs were able to kill that off and stay atop. Thoughts on Polak's hit, guys? I think that's somewhere that he needs to be better, but like you were saying off the air, Dave, he's known for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've seen him make hits like this before, and he's gotten away with it. And I mean, the hit on Soshnikov, I'm surprised that didn't get a lot of attention from the NHL, and maybe it's because Bergeron didn't get injured. But yeah, this one, they're not going to let this one go, and maybe you get to kind of see what things will be like without Roman Polak for a game. I think he will get maybe a game or two, but yeah, it was not a good look for him. And he's prone to doing these things. He gets over aggressive, and sometimes he may not mean to do it, but he's just a big guy, and he's gonna lean in and really nail a guy because that's what he's supposed to be doing. And he went way too far with that one.
How many games do you think he gets, Jake? He has a hearing tomorrow, so does he get multiple games or just one game?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I didn't really get a great look at the hit. All I know is that Torts was livid on the bench about it. So, I think David have a better idea for me. I gotta pull up the hit because I didn't get a good look at it.
Well,
I know he hit him from behind.
Yeah, he hit him on the numbers, but I think the part that really gets it is, and Chris mentioned this, he was getting his forearm where the head was and putting that against the boards. Like, if he hit him just from behind without getting the head, it probably wouldn't have been as bad. But because the head was like a big point of contact, the NHL is not going to take that lightly. And they haven't.
Yeah, Polak was trying to finish his check, but Bjorkstrom was going down as well, so his forearm kind of rode his head into the glass as opposed to riding like his body. His chest would actually hit it instead of his face, but other way around.
Yeah, I mean, just obviously you can't do that. I'm trying to think if it was probably a worse hit than the Soshnikov hit, because yeah, he blatantly sees the numbers and just continues to finish his check. I would say a game, because you know, luckily he wasn't injured and he did get an ejection, so I'd consider that already one game. I would have normally said two if he didn't get ejected, but because he did, I'd go with one.
Well, when he was ejected, it forced Matt Helmwick to really play a lot of minutes on that penalty kill. He played 4 minutes of that penalty kill. That's a ton. He was not off the ice. He was gassed. What was more impressive to you guys? Helmwick playing the 4 minutes on the PK, or Brian Boyle deliberately flipping the puck into the Columbus Blue Jackets bench so they could get a whistle?
I would give it with Helmwick. But, I mean, that Boyle, they needed to get an I couldn't believe how long it was that they didn't have a whistle going. But yeah, I think Helmwick playing for 4 minutes. I know we've given him a lot of grief, but he really stepped up there, so I'll give it to him on this one.
He was really good tonight.
Yeah, and you need him to be. I mean, the last time they played the Blue Jackets, they really laid it. They laid an egg there, and they needed a better effort from them. So I think Helmwick has played better. You can't get worse than what I've seen from him. At certain times of season, but yeah, he's been much better, and it's what you need, especially with Backhawk deciding to blunder the lines, and I know we're going to talk about that, so the fact that he's able to still keep up is good. How long it lasts and how it's going to live up most likely when they make the playoffs, that remains to be seen.
Well, before we get into talking about the blending of lines that Babcock's done, especially with the defensive pairings, how about some love for Nazem Kadri and William Nylander? Kadri hit the 30-goal mark for the first time in his career tonight. Number 43 has had an absolutely remarkable season, especially when you consider the contract he's on. How impressed are you guys with the development of Kadri? I mean, I wasn't expecting this. I was expecting him to be a lot better, but this is insane for him. I mean, this is just a huge step forward, man.
I don't think anyone would have expected him to get 30 goals, shooting the puck less, too. I mean, it goes to show how much he's actually really improved his shot. You know, I thought last year, although he had the really low shot percentage, you know, obviously, you know, you think that those numbers will even out, and they eventually did. But, you know, he wasn't taking good shots. He was shooting it right at the guy's chest or not really picking corners. And now he's not only getting in spaces where he can poach goals, but he's also, you know, shooting where the goal isn't. I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but there's so many players in the NHL that don't know how to, you know, pick a corner, and it's really great to see how much time and effort he's put into his shot, and you can really tell. It's been a great season for him. For me, he's probably the team MVP.
Wow.
Over
Freddie?
Yeah, I think so.
Freddie's been remarkable, man. Over .940 save percentage in 8 of his last 10 games. I mean, I know it's just the last 10, but he's been really solid all season.
Yeah, he has, but I mean, just in terms of what you expected, you know, Freddie's done it before at a high level. We've never seen Naz really do that. At this high level, he's playing at almost a 35-goal pace.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
And he's also being defensively responsible and playing on both ends.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, he's really bought into Babcock's system, and it's really awesome to see where he's come from when he was getting benched by, you know, Carlisle and, you know, all those mishaps back then. It's nice to see that that's just a thing of the past. And it's also great to know that he's still signed up here for 5 more seasons at $4.5 million a year. That seems like a steal now.
Yeah.
And that's really going to help us moving forward, too.
Oh, yeah. To give people an idea of how rare it is for the Leafs to have 2 30 goal scorers at our centers, this stat comes courtesy of David Morisuti. Auston Matthews and Nazem Kadri are the first pair of Leafs centers to score 30 or more goals since Daryl Sittler and Bill Derlego did it during the 1980-81 season.
Yeah,
that's how long ago it's been since the Leafs had 2 centers score 30 or more goals.
Well, thank Sportsnet Stats and TSN for pointing that out. But Yeah, and then I also opened, I don't know if you guys caught it, but the other two centers to do it before Derlego and Sittler came in 1970-71 with Keon and Ullman. Keon had 38 goals, so it's very, very rare for the Leafs to have. See, I think this has been the Leafs' problem over the years. It's not that they haven't had a guy do it, because they've had guys get 30 goals. They haven't had multiple guys down the middle doing it. Sundin never had a guy behind him score 30 goals.
It's also, for me, it's really big that both of those guys are drafted and developed by the Leafs. I mean, I saw last night James Myrtle was saying, when was the last time before Kadri and Austin, obviously Austin Matthews, when was the last time they drafted and developed a 30-goal scorer? And it was Nikolai Kuhlman back in, I think it was 06.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and he's not an, that was pretty much a fluke year, but.
That tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And how many people were ready to give up on Kadri, too?
Yeah, exactly.
A lot. Well, speaking of people that they were willing to give up on or give out in a trade, William Nylander. I mean, the guy's pretty much untradeable at this point, untouchable. We can finally put that crap to bed. But here's some praise for him. This guy has a 9-game point streak now, tying the Leafs rookie record. He got his 34th assist tonight, and he has points in 22 of his last 23 games. And the goal he scored tonight, unreal. Looked like a Phil Kessel-esque type goal.
That was a snipe.
Yeah, I mean, what more praise do you want to give this guy? I think, to your point, Jake, off the air we were talking about, he has to stay with Austin Matthews down on that top line. They can't move him around anymore. I think this is where he's staying for the rest of the season. Fair to say, guys?
Rest of his career, so.
Rest of his career. Ooh.
You can't break them up. I mean, this has the potential to be one of the more dynamic duos in the NHL moving forward. Easily. No doubt about it. For me, you know, he's a guy that I think can reach 80, 85 points. And, geez, just his creativity with the puck and his shot is really underrated. My dad was making a comment. He asked me, he goes, who do you think has a better shot, Matthews or Nylander? And the fact that it was close, the fact that I actually had to think about it is all you need to know.
Well, you and I also had this discussion too. So, yeah, I mean, Nylander, I can't believe his shot. I think it's ever since that goal against Philly that people really started to pay attention to his shot and his shooting ability. He's had it all year. So, yeah, Nylander is definitely... And I remember, I don't know if you were there with me, Chris, when there was a Puck Talks event before the World Cup of Hockey or during the World Cup of Hockey. And they had a Swedish writer. I can't remember his name right off top of my head. But they had a guy from Sweden. And they asked him which Nylander brother was better, Alex or William. And he said, I don't think either... he said it was a tough comparison to make, but he doesn't think William is going to be that good, and he would not be good in the big moments when you need him.
Well, really?
Yeah, I got the crowd like a lot of Leaf fans in the crowd too, so they didn't really sit well for them. But I think Willie is proving that he can kind of step it up when you need him to. So I'll have to find the name of that Swedish writer.
Yeah, it wasn't that one.
To me,
if Nylander can add the size on, he can end the defensive responsibility, you know, get that side of his game going down. He kind of has some traits similar to his fellow countrymen, Henrik Zetterberg and Peter Forsberg. I know that's high praise, but when you look at his offensive creativity with the puck, there's some comparables there.
I would say Zetterberg. I don't know about Forsberg.
I know Forsberg's like really high because he was an awesome two-way player too, but
he was a freaking monster too.
Yeah, he's a fridge out there. He still goes and plays men's league. I don't know if you saw him get dressed up. Last year, he faked like his whole outfit. He got all decked up, put some makeup on, went out there and was acting like a real bender his first shift. And then everybody on the team was like, this guy sucks, get him off the ice. And then he started trying, and then he took everything off at the end, and he's like, hey, it's Peter Forsberg. So that was pretty funny. You guys want to get the D pairings a bit here? I know that's been a huge point of emphasis for Leaf fans recently, especially because Babcock's been changing the way he uses them.
Sure.
The first thing that has really stood out for people is obviously them breaking up Morgan Rielly and Nikita Zaitsev. Nikita Zaitsev kind of looked, I don't want to say broken, but his confidence was definitely, definitely shaken after the Florida game. And he broke him up since then. And we've seen Rielly play with the likes of occasionally Zaitsev, but mostly Roman Polak. It's worked out pretty well. We've also seen him deploy Riley on the power play as kind of like this weapon almost, where they'll bring him in certain situations, a lot of offensive zone starts, and it's just been working out for him. I think Babcock being more cognizant of zone starts and how he deploys the D has been the biggest difference too, but there's a lot to digest there. But what do you guys think about the way he's changed the D?
I think it needed to be done because, yeah, Zaitsev, I think Zaitsev will benefit from playing with Gardner more because Gardner's a guy that'll move the puck and kind of just give it to him. He does what he needs to do with it. Carrick, I think, is a guy you can put with anyone, and he kind of helps, especially with the possession numbers. He just makes very smart plays. There's times where he does get caught, making a weird defensive play, but I like the fact that Riley and Carrick have played well together. Again, Riley people always want to make that comparison to Duncan Keith. Well, Duncan Keith also plays in a lot of offensive situations, which Riley doesn't often do, and you don't see that impact that Riley can have because he's always relied on to do more defensively. And I think Babcock trying to give him more of an opportunity offensively has kind of helped grow his confidence, because after that goal against Carolina, he's played a lot better. And you can see that in all the game against, I think it was, he scored the goal against Boston. I think he had another good, I can't remember the other game, he had a really good offensive play. Like, he is a very good offensive player if he's given more opportunity to do it. If you say once in a while you try to give it to him, I'm not sure you're going to get what you want out of him. But if you give him more of an opportunity to do it, I think he'll prove that he can do it.
Well, I think Mike Babcock has tried to force the defensive game on him a bit, where he goes, I know what this guy's offensive ceiling is, but defensively I'm not too sure. So he's going to try and force more defensive responsibility on him, knowing that the points will always be there.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you think his ceiling is for points-wise, Jake?
For Zaitsev?
For Riley. You think he could get 50 to 55 points?
Yeah, I think he could hit 50 points.
If he plays well on the power play, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, he doesn't really play much power play, and I guess it's because he doesn't have a great shot or anything like that, but he's a really, really pretty good passer, especially like coming out on a breakout. He's a really gifted passer in that, right? I think his ceiling would be like 10 goals, 40 assists for me. So, yeah, 50 points would make sense.
Okay. Who's more complete offensively at the moment, Jake Gardner or Morgan Riley? Strictly offensively.
Jake Gardner. I think he's a better skater. He's a better passer, and he's a better shooter too.
I think Riley's got the speed. Jake, I think, definitely has the shot. But I like the way that Riley is able to. The thing is, like, Gardner, there's times where he'll take more time with the puck and make plays and like think about the play he's gonna make. But Riley just goes with it, and you kind of just have to keep up with him. So they kind of play different styles with that. But yeah, I would probably give the edge to Gardner, but I think Riley is not that far behind.
Yeah, I was just curious to get your guys' thoughts on that, because we see Gardner and Zaitsev take most of the power play minutes, and recently Riley's kind of been injected into it a bit. I guess maybe he's a change of pace guy or just a different look altogether. But I was just curious if you guys felt that way, because Gardner's been the power play guy all season. So.
And he should be. He's a better shooter.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Given the key to Zaitsev's point total, guys, and obviously his play recently, could he become too expensive for the Leafs this offseason? I know a lot of people want him to sign a $2-3.5 million per year contract, or even 3x3.5. What's too much?
I think anything over what Riley got. So I think anything up until like $4.75 million is fine with me.
That's a big number.
I would say no more than 4.5.
Sorry, Dave.
Hey, that $250,000 is gonna make a big difference, Jake. You know, but he's an RFA. I think the important thing to remember, he's an RFA, so the Leafs are not pressed right away to do something. But obviously, the earlier you get them signed, and the longer you give them and try to buy the free agent years, it makes it easier. But you also think the Leafs have Well, right now they only have, let me see here. They have, well, they do have five defensemen signed for next season, two of those being Marchenko and Marinson. So you're basically looking for four, maybe three, four more defensemen into next season, because I think one of them is going to get picked up in the expansion draft. Although I don't know why Vegas would take them. So that the Leafs have to be very careful with how much money they're going to put into a guy like Zaitsev, but you're probably better off getting him done now, because if there's a guy you want in the future, you don't want to have to compete with Zaitsev getting a pay raise and then trying to go out and get another guy.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Replacing him would not be easy. I mean, what you just said about the expansion draft, that's not only one thing to consider, but Hunlak is both free agents. I know we're not the biggest fans of them, and a lot of people aren't, but there's still two players you have to replace. And as we've seen in the free agent market, replacing D is not the easiest thing to do. So,
I guess
the Leafs are in a position to. Well, I know we could say I guess, but there's still two bodies, you know.
Yeah, I said I guess. I guess you have to replace them. You're technically right,
but it's my pretty issue hard. Only technically right, Chris.
It's called addition by subtraction. In my opinion.
I agree, but unless like a Dermott or somebody they feel is ready to step up, I don't know where they're going to get them. Where they get replacements from? It kind of gives Zaitsev a little bit of leverage too in negotiations, going, hey, I know you guys need me, so what are you willing to pay?
Well, interesting enough, I saw Dermott play last night, and he's looked better. I mean, I've seen him play twice this year, and he's definitely looked better this time around.
He's kind of got heavy feet.
Yeah, he's not the quickest player on the ice, but his positioning is a lot better, and he's definitely not afraid of the physical game, which is good. But he's not. I don't see him in the picture next year, and I don't see Nielsen either. Nielsen is kind of, I wouldn't say dropped off, but his game's got a lot quieter since going on that offensive tear to start the season. So I think both of them still need another year, and this is why I think a trade is going to happen. You're going to see the Leafs add a guy by a trade, whether it's a guy that a team doesn't want to lose in the expansion draft, so maybe the Leafs trade one of the defensemen that they know they're not going to keep or protect, and they say to another team, give us a guy that you don't want to lose for nothing, and you maybe trade that other guy as a part of it. So that's where I see the Leafs trying to make a deal in that regard. But other than that, there's not another way you're going to add a defenseman that's going to be an impact next season, other than finding, I don't know, you're not going to find the UFA. It's going to have to be via trade.
Yeah, the UFA would be like a Shattenkirk.
Or Michael Stone.
You didn't like Michael Stone. Now all of a sudden you're...
I didn't want to trade a lot for him.
But now Jake's okay signing him.
Yeah. I think he signs
because
back in
Calgary. Because he looks better than the two trash bins they got right now.
Oh, wow. Well, that's an upgrade on a pylon, I think. Well, maybe not. but no, Michael Stone, I see him sign... I mean, I haven't had a chance to ask someone I know about Stone who covered the trade, but
I think he'll get like 3.5 years or so.
Yeah,
over like maybe 5 years.
Calgary wants to re-sign him because Weidman is not re-signing, so he's the obvious candidate to replace him. So, and he, you know, he's from Alberta, so that makes it easier to cozy him up to re-signing there. So. Unless he doesn't resign, yeah, go after him. But there's not many, there is not many guys you can go after other than Shattenkirk.
No, and it's obvious that the trade market or Shattenkirk are the only two real options for them. I mean, you just know they're trading for a defenseman. That's has to happen.
Has to, right? I mean, I'm looking at this chart for next year, and there's no way they're getting any free agents that are. You could argue the same or maybe a little bit better than Hunwick or Polak. I know they're trash, but you're looking at who's available here, and it's nothing to really brag about because you got Riley, Zaitsev, Carrick, and Gardner. Those four guys are locked in. So now you're looking to add to it, and I don't know. It's pretty grim out there. So I think the trade has to happen, right? We're right back to that talk again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you never know what's going to happen with the Russian league. I mean, they signed another player from Russia, or a college free agent. you never know. There's so many different ways to get players now. It's also just made it really hard to figure out where you can find players, because the Leafs are one of the unique ones. I feel like they've acquired players in got to be the most possible ways you can. You've signed a European free agent, a college free agent, an unrestricted free agent. You've drafted your own guys. I mean, and they probably traded for a restricted free agent. They had to have been Connor Carrick. So, and they've found very unique ways of putting together their team.
Yeah, very Detroit-esque.
And adding,
Detroit was doing that for a long time.
Adding guys in the waiver wire too. That's the other way.
Oh yeah, that's another way, and they've definitely done that.
Yeah, they've been really active this year on that. Shifting gears a bit, Austin Matthews. He's got points in his last three games. You know, before that, pretty quiet, pretty pedestrian by his standards. Do you guys think he's tired or possibly injured? I know James Myrtle hinted at it when the team was in Tampa Bay. Matthews said that everybody's playing banged up, so there's kind of the talk that he might be injured. On top of that, he's played a lot of hockey. You look at what he's played through. Obviously, he had the World Championships before the draft, then he had the Combine, then the draft, then the rookie camp, then the World Cup of Hockey, then he had training camp with the Leafs, and then the NHL. So he's played a ton of hockey this past calendar year. Injured, hurt, tired. What's the deal?
Tired. I think he's tired. I mean, so many of the Leafs guys are look like they're not slowing down. The only guy that I don't think is affected is actually Mitch Marner, who I think has probably played the most games. I think he's probably played more games than Matthews, but it might be close. But, you know, it's Matthews, yeah, it looks like it's kind of draining on him, although today he was fantastic. I mean, he was all over the ice. He had one, he could have had a couple more too. So, I mean, maybe it's just a thing where he was running out of steam down the stretch, and maybe the fact that they're in a playoff chase, and not only in that, they're leading a playoff chase, that they'll re-energize him, because we're going to need him down the stretch. But yeah, it's definitely not out of the realm of possibility that he's playing for sure tired, because he can use that excuse for sure. He's probably played over 120 games this year, so.
Yeah, he's I don't think he's hurt. I think you would see it more in the way he's playing, and that's I think more fatigue, and you know, he's probably trying a bit too much on certain plays to get something going, or it's just frustration building in at point at times. But his last, I mean, the game against Chicago, that goal he scored with Nylander was absolutely it's what you're kind of, what's the best way of saying it? It doesn't surprise you to see it because they've done it so many times, but it's just so great to see it more and more. And then the game, and obviously the goal against Columbus tonight, just kind of his routine sort of goal, which is to go hard to the net and get something in front of the net. So I think him finding different ways to score is also helping him as well. He's not a one-trick pony like some other guys that the Leafs have had. That definitely helps, and I think this is where it really he's going to get tested the most of how he wants the season to end. He's only one goal away from tying Wendell's record for most goals by a Leaf rookie, and I don't see why he can't break it, and it would be cool to see if he
could. It'd be a pretty big disappointment if he didn't break
it.
Colossal disappointment.
I think he would actually. It might be a bit of a stretch, but 40 might not be out of the realm of possibility for him.
It would take some serious hot stretch, but yeah, it would.
A couple of multiple goal games will change that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and he's capable. That's the thing. He's capable. It's not like we're saying something absolutely ridiculous that we don't expect to happen. For this kid, it's definitely possible.
He had 14 goals in, I think, 12 games. From late mid-December to what, mid-January? I think it was something like that. He had a double-digit goals in, I think it was 10 or 12 games.
You can always say, what if? But what if he didn't have that cold streak? I wouldn't call it a cold streak. Just that time where nothing went in for him. He would have easily been at 40 goals and possibly a top of the NHL goals list for this season.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of what-ifs with this team, too. I mean, we look at all the overtime losses. This team could arguably be first in the Atlantic.
Yep.
If you even take away half that. If not first, competing for first.
If anything, would you want to be first in the Atlantic? To face the Rangers in the first round over...
No, say, I don't want to play the Rangers.
Montreal.
I would take the 2 seed, though, to play... be home against Ottawa. That would be nice.
That'd be awesome.
It's not out of possibility. It's not... Impossible.
Although if we do manage to hold on to the spot and play Ottawa, we'll have potentially 7 home games anyway, so...
Pretty much.
I just got that.
Ottawa's a lot better this year, though. I mean, I think we can
They all... are. They're goaltending. I was talking about this with a friend. They're an underrated team, but... Yes.
They're banged up right now, but they're underrated.
Yeah, they are. They have pretty much one superstar and a lot of pretty good players, but... You know, that they definitely have the defensive game that would be able to beat the Leafs, and they've proven that they can beat the Leafs. Obviously, I think we played them 3 times, if I'm not mistaken. They're 2-1.
Yep.
Could be. Yeah. No, you're right.
So,
and Eric Carlson's a different player this year. He's not as offensively driven as you're used to seeing. He's a lot more defensively responsible. They're just a different team.
He's leading the league in blocking shots. Like, I love how people are lauding that. They're like, oh, that's awesome. I'm like, no. Let that bum Barkowski or whatever his name is, the guy with no teeth, block shots. Like, don't let my superstar player keep blocking shots. But hey, I mean, it's working for him, and you know, obviously the coaching change had a positive effect on him. But you know, obviously the coaching changes have had a positive effect on probably a third of the league this past year or so.
Even this past month, the coach has been fired. The teams have just gotten red hot. Although the Leafs have been killers of red hot teams.
Yeah, they have.
Beating Columbus, Boston, hanging tight with Chicago. It's been nice. On that note, guys, I think we'll wrap this podcast up. As always, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Tip of the Tower. You can subscribe to the show on SoundCloud and iTunes at Tip of the Tower. You can follow me on Twitter at Crystal Kranitz. You can follow Jake on Twitter at JakeMiddleton12. You can follow Dave on Twitter at D_Morisuti. Thanks for listening, guys, and enjoy the stretch run of the week.
Toronto is proud and happy to select the Modal Sweden, William Nylander.
The Knights, Mitch Marner.